You're listening to The Whole Package Cash, a news and discussion show about the world of DB2. Thanks for joining us again for the only database podcast working round the clock to bring you DB2 11.1 PDF documentation in scratch and sniff format. This episode was recorded on December 7, 2016, and this is episode number 29. The show is hosted by me, Ian Bjørhovde, and my co-host, Fred Sabatka. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Ian.
How's it going?
Not bad. It's our annual in-person episode. We recorded one like this last year.
Yeah.
Shadow of O'Hare.
That's true. It was almost exactly a year ago, too, wasn't it?
Now we're at Shea Bjørhovde, which is very nice, I might add. The bourbon is excellent.
Thanks to you.
The cats are friendly, well-mannered. I couldn't ask for anything more.
Awesome. So it's been a while. We've been busy trying to hunt down PDF documentation for the last 6 months since DB2 11 was released. Do you have any updates on that one?
Yeah, I'm out there with everyone else. I'm scouring all the torrent sites. I haven't found any pre-release copies of it. Actually, I did, but it turned out to be bogus. I probably have a virus now. But yeah, I'd be curious to know what the reasoning behind that was. I think the PDF format for the DB2 documentation was really helpful. But is it something that we'll never see again?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw on DB2L maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, Willie Favero, who now no longer works for IBM, he was looking for PDF documentation for DB2 11 for Z, I think. And there was it hit quite a nerve. There were a lot of angry people looking for PDF documentation. And I don't think that falls just in the mainframe.
Yeah. Well, I'd say also the mainframe users are, I think, accustomed to having more complete and thorough documentation in any format. There's just so much at stake there. It's a platform that tends to operate at a very high volume right off the bat. So the stakes are higher. Everything's bigger. So I'd say the documentation has generally been more exact for the mainframe. And we're feeling the pinch in the LUW area, not even having PDF at all yet, and maybe not ever, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything, but it certainly doesn't seem like we're going to get it. I kept hoping that we even would get a downloadable version of the knowledge center or the information center, but that hasn't appeared either, and I'm starting to lose hope.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been as interested in that, just knowing how often the knowledge center tends to get adjusted.
Well, it's not really any different than PDF docs, right?
I don't know. Something about a PDF just feels more permanent. It's going to work better on... First of all, I'm rarely using laptops. The more anyone travels, I think the less they use laptops, because laptops, as we know, are second-class citizens on turboprops or helicopters or Osprey or whatever. They always ask you to put them away at different times, whereas tablets can be as big as a cafeteria tray and still be just tapping away the entire time with your Pokemons and your fruit ninjas and all that, and no one cares. So I've been traveling a fair amount. Not had my biggest travel year this year, but it's one of my bigger ones. So most of what I've been doing lately has been on a tablet. And I still have the last version of the DB2 LUW docs in PDF format on my tablet. And I have searched it and I've gotten results. So that was the first thing I was looking forward to doing with 11.1, and still waiting. Not always in an area where when I need answers about DB2, I have an active internet connection. A lot of my customers don't have their servers hooked up to the internet to download stuff. And if I walk in with my tablet on a cellular connection, odds are, I don't know, and tell me how your luck's been with this. What are the odds of you getting a good cellular data signal in a customer's data center to go and look something up in the live knowledge center?
Yeah, well, fortunately, I'm not in customers' data centers all that often, but I get what you're saying. And having the PDFs offline where you don't need to depend on the knowledge center search actually working or even just having internet access is valuable. But I don't know. I had hoped when the Redbooks started releasing Redbooks in ebook format, I started to hope that maybe we'd start seeing product documentation in ebook format. But alas, I don't think that is in our future.
Yeah. I'm not sure. For me, ebook formats tend to work best for things I actually want to read cover to cover because it keeps track of where you are. You can make notes about stuff. You can come back to it. That's not really how I or probably anyone uses the documentation.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point.
I think an ebook version, if IBM were to focus their limited resources on something, I wouldn't necessarily, if an ebook format was more difficult to author than a PDF format, I wouldn't vote for that. And we've been asked as much. We've been asked to vote on things like that in technical advisory boards, customer advisory councils, consultant meetings, you know, all these back room gatherings where we're talking about the future of the product. PDF would be fine for me. Red books, I would be more likely to read those cover to cover, or at least chapter by chapter.
Yeah.
So those work better as ebooks.
I will give some love to the Downloadable Knowledge Center. I'd never been a big proponent of using that, but I had used it at one point over the summer and found that the search was more stable than I'd seen. And with all the problems there have been with the Knowledge Center and even the Info Center before that, you'd search for create table and you'd have to go to the fifth page to find the actual syntax.
But that was just to give you that sense of reward when you hit the actual page or create table. If you just had it as the number one hit, I mean, you'd become blasé about the whole thing and just be spoiled. So you put a little bit of the hunt in it. You know, for me, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like my Pokemon Go. I need to find a page about a syntax of one of the things. The Google bombing hasn't quite taken yet. I'd say for Google searches, I'm still getting hits for versions, say 9.7 or 10.1 of the Knowledge Center.
Yeah.
And then, once you land on those, the one thing IBM's done really well with the Knowledge Center is that the URL stays consistent for the topic. And most topics have carried through, you know, most topics in the current 11.1 documentation are present in 10.5 and earlier to some extent. So you just pull that drop down and you pick the version number that it applies to. Very similar to what Microsoft's documentation does for, say, like the .NET API or SQL Server features.
That's definitely been a nice addition, being able to flip between different versions of a particular documentation page.
Yeah, it's been a big help. I'm glad they went with that. So I see a lot of promise there, but it's still easier to find a lot of these things if you're searching for the equivalent command in 9.7 or 10.1 and just going to Google. I don't think that's any secret.
Yeah. Well, maybe I know that there is supposedly a FixPack coming at some point in the not too distant future. At least you'd hope so. It's been almost 6 months since DB211 was released. But I don't know. Maybe with the FixPack, we'll get some offline documentation.
Or maybe we have to start a change.org petition. We'll round up the rabble from that DB2L thread, and they'll be the first signers, and then they'll spread the word. We'll see how big it goes.
So we were in Las Vegas in October for the first ever World of Watson. What did you make of it?
It was a big difference from the last conference I was at, which was 2 years ago. They had just changed the name from IOD to Insight, so we had to change the heading on our bingo card accordingly. And it was already changing a lot then from IOD to Insight. And then 2 years later, Insight to World of Watson was a huge change. The first thing I noticed as an older person, definitely older than all of the marketing folks, all the stock photography models, and all of the cool kids that are being brought into the IBM camp for, you know, Watson and cognitive and Internet of Things and fintech and all that, is that I'm an old person who wants to sit down probably once every couple hours, if I'm, or unless I'm, you know, in sessions. But if I'm roaming about all the different things there were to see at World of Watson, they took a lot of the seating area over along some of these concourses in the Mandalay Bay Event Center, or Mandalay Bay Convention Center, and turned them into stages, you know, little mini auditoriums. So the sprawl of what used to, would have been confined to the expo area really expanded into parts of the conference that in prior years would have been seating for lunches and breakfast, or just kind of a networking breezeway, that grand promenade on a couple of levels leading up to the expo floor. Those were all basically taken over with stages with very limited seating. So the coffee overall was good. They had that really good espresso station.
Yeah, that was nice.
That one area. Did you actually pull anything off that?
Yeah, I got a coffee there once when I had some time. But yeah, no, I noticed that. It was definitely packed in even more. The expo floor didn't feel like it was one room anymore. It felt like there were two gigantic rooms. And I didn't have a good spatial sense of what was going on there.
You see the division as where we would have typically ended the expo floor and began the lunch area.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that was kind of this, I don't know what we'd call it, a gazebo of some kind. I mean, it was, you walked through essentially a little panoramic stage with a lot of the Harry Potter style Watson music kind of flowing around you, and lots of screens to show you what you could do with it as you transferred from one area to the other. Then they had that one smart vehicle that kind of went around a circuit.
Oh, I never saw that.
So that was the, I think it was the Ollie bus or something.
I remember hearing about it, but
and it didn't take you to any decent parts of the conference though.
I think one time I saw it.
They still didn't have my idea, which was the courtesy carts they have at big airports to help you make a tight connection, like in Minneapolis, where your connection flight is always at the opposite end of another leg of the spider.
They didn't send the IBM Porsche Panamera to pick you up and drive you over to the T-Mobile Event Center?
No, I did. That was Uber. And Uber worked out great for shuttling over to the T-Mobile Event Center, because some of the buses were running on fairly limited schedules. But there were so many buses.
Yeah, I think IBM had every single chartered bus in Las Vegas.
Except the Deuce, which runs up and down the strip as a double-decker.
Yeah, not that one. I have to say, I mean, as nice as the T-Mobile Center was, and as amazing as that kind of open food truck garden on the outside of the T-Mobile Center was, that venue was a mile and a half away from the convention center. And, you know, you could wait in line and take the bus, and that worked okay, but it was just close enough that you felt like you could walk there faster, but then you realize.
And you could do half and half too. So I got to meet the new Champions crew, who we'd only been really, the IBM Champions had only really been hearing from some of these folks in email. So got to meet them, hang out with them a little bit. And after the keynote, which we'll talk about in a little bit, we just started walking back from the arena back to Mandalay Bay, but kind of stopped like halfway at, I think, New York. And then just got an Uber there.
Yeah.
So you could do it a few different ways, because Uber in Las Vegas is particularly tricky, because every casino has rules about where Ubers can pick up and drop off. And if you break those rules too many times, they will 86 that driver. So it's a tense environment, but I'm happy that they operate at all. The cab lines are still really long at a lot of these casinos, even with my plutonium status with MGM Mirage, which is going away.
Yeah.
I didn't play enough Glitter Kitty slot machines to lock in my plutonium status. So the cab lines are long, and I got to the arena early enough to really walk it from the inside.
Yeah.
Because you got to be an IBM champion. The access that we got at the arena with that was great. Being on the floor and being allowed in early to just kind of see stuff.
Yeah.
Walk the whole thing. Then I realized the tacos were outside. So then I left it, and we had some great tacos and sandwiches, and all the food trucks for the keynote were just sitting there operating for free.
Right. That was genius. I really appreciated that one. It certainly beat having an airline chicken buffet in the convention center. But yeah, the event center was great. And Libby and Gracia.
And Leanne Holmquist and Liz Lathan.
Did an amazing job. And man, the floor was really small. I mean, compared to the Mandalay Bay Event Center, where it felt like it was a pretty significant number of people could get down on the floor, at the T-Mobile Center, it didn't feel like there were all that many people who got down there. So it felt, yeah.
it was champions. Pretty cool. I think some like CIO, you know, CXO. And then there was a section that just, it was called China. So we sat next to China, and then it was the band.
Yeah.
So that was a real intimate thing. And I got some pictures from my seat of the stage, and it was pretty close.
I have to say, from a technical education perspective, that was a little less than stellar. Yeah. There was really one track of DB2 for LUW stuff.
Yeah.
There were a few other kind of ancillary sessions that you could go to, but it was one room that you sat in the entire time, basically, during the conference.
For better or worse, yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, I guess it has some advantages to it, but the other downside to the technical content was the sessions were cut from 60 minutes down to 45 minutes, which I think was a disaster. It was cut just enough to me that presenters didn't feel like they were really going to edit their presentations, their 60-minute presentations down. And so it felt like a lot of them were rushed trying to get through 60 minutes of material in 45 minutes. Where if it had been like a 30-minute slot, then presenters would have known, you know, there's no way.
Yeah.
And they would have cut more out of presentations.
Well, and Melanie Stouffer, to her credit, would still have put out 150 slides, but she would have navigated the reduced time slot effectively. I think there were at least two rooms involved, because I remember racing between a couple of rooms where some of the pure scale sessions were being held versus the rest of the DB2LUW. George Backlars's DB2111 intro I thought was quite good. We were just talking about the lack of a PDF documentation, but I'd say the ebook that George and his team put out, I think with Enzo Cialini, was noteworthy. And he had that link ready to go in, I think, QR code format before the conference even started. So it kept popping up, and I hope a lot of people got to it. We'll put it in the show notes as well.
Yeah, hopefully it's still available.
Of course. It's and if not, we'll connect you. Don't worry. We got it. It's really good, and it's really thorough, and talks about a lot of the things that make DB2111 compelling.
So World of Watson, it definitely felt different. It was a good conference, but we'll see how it goes next year. I noticed that the conference goes from October 29th through November 2nd. Which to me is having it go across Halloween makes me wonder if anyone who signed off on that deal actually has kids, because that's going to be a major issue for a lot of us.
You know, I have houseplants, and I still see that as a hardship because I like to be at my house every Halloween, and I will have treats for the kids and I'll have cocktails for the parents.
Is your houseplant a pumpkin?
No,
named David?
No, I mean, my house plant is a part of the family. It got a shout out in a DB2 book I edited. But even with just a house plant, Halloween's a special time. So we'll see how that goes next year and how many people are going to be coming to the conference in Big Bang Theory costumes. Probably a lot.
So after Las Vegas, we went to iDug in Europe again in Brussels.
A bit more DB2 content there.
Yeah, just a little bit. The whole CPC did quite an amazing job putting this conference together, especially given some internal changes in how the event was staffed.
Yeah.
So very happy, nice conference facility. The weather was left a little to be desired.
It kept you in the conference, engaged in all that new material.
Oh, you're so...
diplomatic.
You're so optimistic.
There was some shifting going on, though. I mean, this was one of those where in the heart of Brussels, you don't have too many big, big hotels. So they're kind of clustered together around this kind of modern metro station.
Yeah.
And then, which is under construction. And then these little hotels are kind of stacked like cartons of eggnog around it. So you didn't have one big all-encompassing facility. They had the expo floor across the square at the Sheraton. And I just wouldn't even put on a coat for that. I would just walk outside and just brisket all the way to the other place. Because then if I, you know, because I'd be cold for 45 seconds, a minute. Then I'd be back inside with this dumb jacket if I wore one that I had to be holding on to for the rest of the afternoon. So I just decided to tough it out and walk across to get to the other site. But yeah, it was really good. And there's so much new material to cover. It was a well-timed conference. It was well-run. And I'm still excited about some of the material that I learned at this. I think one of the best takeaways for me was, I think it was Melanie that talked about how you can block incoming connections to a running DB2 instance by launching an almost trace that suspends the TCP listener part of the engine while the rest of the engine is still allowed to process. And I hadn't really thought of traces as something you kind of do halfway or not quite, but that was kind of how it was described. And I think about lots of weird scenarios for the DB2 engine and what it does and how it works. And I'm learning a lot about it. I'm learning about it every year, more and more about it every year. And that is still not one I'd come up with yet.
Yeah, that was a crazy one. And that was an amazing session, Melanie. It was, oh my God, lessons are hard or something like that was the title.
Yeah.
And Melanie was advertising it as the best presentation she's ever put together, which if you know Melanie and you know her presentations, that's hard to imagine. But you know what? She was right on. That was one amazing presentation. It was 20 tips. And she managed to get through like 19 of them in the 60-minute slot. It was great. The presentation that I think blew me away the most was I went to go see Henrik Lozier. He's an IBMer from somewhere south in Bavaria. And he was presenting on connecting DB2 with Jupyter notebooks.
Which I hadn't heard of before.
Yeah, I had seen some talk about it at World of Watson, which really piqued my interest. And that was in relation to Jupyter using Spark and DB2 together. But in this case, he was just doing direct from DB2 into Jupyter. And he's able to, you know, pull data out of the database and generate graphs. And it's all in this notebook, which basically is effectively a web page that you're looking at with Python or Scala code. And what was really crazy was he's running this presentation and you think it's a PowerPoint and then he pulls a fast one on you and goes out of full screen mode and you realize that his presentation was built using a Jupyter notebook and he was running it live from that presentation.
And any slide could have been putting stuff into or out of DB2 if that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of dynamic areas that are possible in this Jupyter notebook. So you run it on your own system. You're hosting your own live website because you want to have all that code running against your database. I don't know if there's anyone out there that's hosting Jupyter notebooks and giving you a database that you can populate in.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. But I mean, what's cool about the Jupyter notebooks is that, you know, there's all this dynamic stuff that you can do and you can regenerate, like you can generate graphs. But what's amazing is the Jupyter notebook is basically just a file. It's about a bunch of JSON and you can send it to someone and they can open it with a notebook viewer and see all the information. Now they may not be able to refresh the the slides interactively, but at least they can see what was generated. But if they have the connections to their database, they can, you can, you know, play around and make changes and stuff like that and regenerate. And what's cool is I think Heinrich even made his presentation available on GitHub. So if you wanna take a look at it and download it, it's something that you can look at the code that he used basically to write his entire presentation.
Yeah, I'd go as far as to say any DB2 person who's putting code on GitHub is probably worth looking at, but Heinrich especially. So he's been really diligent in pursuing newer technologies, cutting edge technology as it pertains to DB2, whether it's Bluemix or Watson or Jupyter Notebooks or whatever. Anything he's working on it because it's new and cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it was a very successful conference. Heinrich actually pointed out to us in some episode past, we had been talking about Stack Overflow and this mystery user Mustachio on Stack Overflow.
Are you going to stir something up?
And it's funny, for all of our digging and to try at that time to figure out who this DB2 person was, I never actually looked at his Stack Overflow profile, but Heinrich pointed out that that apparently Mustachio in his profile claims to not listen to Package Cache, so
which is his or her right.
That was pretty awesome.
So it's a start, as it said in Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance.
maybe we'll figure it out one day.
I don't know. I think we would have figured it out by now. But Mustachio, for those not familiar, is a very prolific and helpful source of DB2 knowledge on Stack Overflow. And anyone willing to put up with the, a lot of lazy questions get answered, kind of like an RTFM type question. And Mustachio handles it in a sometimes curt but generally diplomatic way, and trying to point the asker toward some kind of resource or to ask questions that could lead to a better phrased question that's a bit more precise and useful. So anyone who's looked at DB2 material on Stack Overflow has probably run across answers from Mustachio or Heinrich, along with our other friends, and in particular Andres Gomez Casanova, not an IBMer, and then also Ian and myself.
And Michael Tiefenbacher has been
quite, yes,
busy lately too.
I'm missing a few already, I know, but we've mentioned some of the big hitters.
Yeah, in fact, Heinrich did another session in Brussels talking about Stack Overflow and picking, you know, top questions. And another thing, it's amazing. I mean, I've been on Stack Overflow for years now, and I didn't realize that there was that you could actually write SQL to query the Stack Overflow database. So he's doing some amazingly cool stuff with open source and new technology. It's pretty awesome.
Judging from what he's presenting, I'd say Heinrich's got a pretty sweet deal at IBM to be able to follow things he is. And I too was a bit humbled by the knowledge that, or that is by the revelation that a site that I use quite a lot, either directly or indirectly, I search for a lot of things on Google that turn out to be answered as Stack Overflow answers. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. Then for Heinrich to say, oh, by the way, you can query a lot of information on and about Stack Overflow and its different sub sites and sister sites through an SQL style query language. I'm going, why didn't I know that already? Here I am, someone who plays games like Civilization, maybe even Grand Theft Auto. And the first thought is, I wish I could query this game in SQL to find stuff out.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing.
So to have that right under my nose the whole time in Stack Overflow and not dig into it already was was a bit embarrassing for me. So I'm glad he pointed it out.
Yeah. Well, as I said, Brussels was an amazingly well-run conference. The CPC was great. They had some good keynotes, both from the opening with that guy Paul Sloan, kind of a motivational speaker who was good at poking fun a little bit, but also giving some good meaning and context, even though he's not what you would consider a typical DB2 conference speaker.
And that's, I think, in terms of typical, I'd say atypical has been typical. I remember the keynote at 2014 IDUG in Prague, also not really someone from the DB2 or even the database realm, but went into talking about the overall picture, the big picture of business and analytics and opportunity and timeliness and risk. So, which are all good things that for DBAs to keep in mind as they try to solve problems for their users and designers and also think ahead in finding value for their organization.
Right. Well, I'll be looking forward to the European conference again next year. As I've said to many times, this is one of my favorite conferences out of all the DB2 conferences. So next year is looking like it's going to be great. It's in Lisbon in Portugal, but the greatest news about that is that it's in the beginning of October. So we will have some really beautiful weather, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we have that same swap between the IBM conference and the IDUG conference in the fall, like we did 3 years ago with Barcelona.
Right.
Which having a conference in Spain in early October was just gorgeous. I don't think it would have been too much worse at the typical time, which is more to early to mid November. But that, and also in a similar situation in 2009 with Italy, the IDUG Italy conference being in October timeframe rather than November, turned out to be great. In fact, it was kind of hot in Italy at that time. So Lisbon in October is exciting for me too. I've never been there. There's a lot of places I haven't been but for the DB2 conference. So it's my way of seeing the world, or at least Europe.
There you go. All right. Well, I don't have anything else for this episode. Hopefully we can get another one recorded, perhaps just after the beginning of the year. So thank you very much for listening. You can find me on Twitter at IDBJORH, and Fred is at DB2Fred. We'd love to hear what you thought of this episode or any of our other episodes. You can send us email to feedback@packagecache.com or find us on Twitter using the handle packagecache. The show notes with links to everything that we talked about in this episode are available at packagecache.com/29. Along with those links to talk to us or subscribe to the show using your podcast player of choice. So with that, we will see you next time.